Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, November 6th, 2010. This is episode 715. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones and camcorders, home theater and MP3 players. This is it. If you've been wondering what the heck is going on in the digital revolution, I'm here to tell you. I'm here to help you. We do it every day, every weekend day at this time. Now, let me tell you what's coming up, because we have a great guest in studio with us, a guy who joins us every week on the show for just a few minutes, but he's going to be here for the entire show. So we are going to talk home theater today. This is our home theater day. So I'll tell you that up front. So when you call 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number 888-827-5536, we're looking for home theater calls, in particular for Scott. I mean, I can answer some other stuff maybe, but hey, when you have a guy like Scott Wilkinson in the studio with you, editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, columnist for Home Theater Magazine, when you have a wizard like this man, and sometimes he even wears the wizard hat, you got to take advantage of it. So give us a ring and let's talk about a home theater. Before we get to that, Scott, I am going to mention briefly, because I played with it for the last couple of days, my Kinect came.
Ah.
Yeah, this is the new Microsoft gaming controller. I actually bought the whole new Microsoft Xbox 360 because the new one that bundled with the Elite has a connector for the Elite. It also has Wi-Fi built in, and I got the 250 gigabyte hard drive because you can copy games to the hard drive. You still need the disk to, you know, validate it, but you can play off the hard drive, which does speed things up. Mm. It also helps with the scratches, which I seem to get. In any event, I got the new one, got the Kinect. Set it up. It took a while to set up. I have to say, and I think I understand why. This is a whole new way of controlling a game, and they need to do a little training. So you connect as a bar. It's about, I'd say about a foot wide and only about 3 inches tall. It's got three sensors on. It looks like three cameras. They're not, but I'll tell you what they are in a second. And you put that bar either 2 feet above the ground, or 6 feet above the ground. Those would be the best. You can put it in between, but it'd be the best either, in other words, on top of the TV or mm-hmm. below the TV. And that's right. Where I put it, below the TV. They said the closest you can get to 2 or 6 feet, the better. And the reason is that thing has a camera in it, a sensor in it. It also has an infrared
emitter.
Emitter, I guess. Yeah, because mm-hmm. it's measuring your position in space as well as, you know, your outline, your profile. Right. In fact, as you set it up, you'll see that, you know, it can see your outline. It can see the room. It actually has voice control in it as well. And the setup takes a while. Among other things, you set up the voice control. But then after, it took me about an hour to get it all set up. And then I started playing a game. It was immediately elbowed out of the way by my 16-year-old son, who said, "You're a loser. Let me try this." And I couldn't get him off it for the rest of the evening. Man. So I've only I only played a little bit of the game. It comes with an adventure, Kinect Adventures game, which is there's river rafting, there's an obstacle course, there's some weird stuff, and it's pretty, you know, like popping balloons and plugging leaks, which he hated. He said, "Why am I plugging leaks? This is boring. This is like a job." And I said, "Well, I think what they're doing, and I think this is the case, is they're training you on getting used to the idea of using your body instead of a controller. So you're in a glass, this is a stupid game, but you're in a glass phone booth, and fish keep ramming into it and plugging and putting holes in it, and the water starts leaking in, and you have to touch the edges, front, left, right, or floor, to plug the holes. And sometimes you have 4 or 5 things. In fact, at one point you had to use your head, both hands, and both feet to plug all 5 holes.
Well, that's kind of a clever way to to define the boundaries.
You. Exactly. It's teaching you. I realized this. And he said, this is really boring. I said, well, do it anyway, because I think what you're doing is learning kind of the language of Kinect, because we're not used to using our bodies to play a game.
Well, with Wii, you've got the, that has an accelerometer in it. You can tell how it's moving in space, right?
But this is your whole body, and that's what's really interesting about this. Yeah, clearly Microsoft, and by the way, Sony has a Move controller, which is much more like the Wii. I mean, it's really the same idea as a Wii.
Yeah.
The Microsoft Kinect is very different. It's a, it's sensing your whole body in space. And it really was a lot of fun. You know, I've ordered a dancing game that, this looks kind of fun, where you're
dancing Leo.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, there is a camera in this, and the camera can take pictures of you during the game. Every once in a while, a little camera icon will flash up on the screen, and I learned what it's doing is taking a picture of you. At the end of the game, it shows you in really absurd, sometimes obscene, mostly absurd positions, you know, reaching and jumping, and then they have cute captions along with it. And you can share those, by the way, on Xbox Live. I have to say, this was a lot of fun. We got a Wii and played with it for a while, very briefly, and got bored with it pretty quickly. Mm. The Wii Sports is really fun, but, you know,
like bowling and
bowling
tennis
and stuff. And there is a sports game you can get with this, but I think because it's the whole body, it's going to be much more engaging. I have to say, it's much more work. You work up a sweat, but you, this time, you're jumping, you're leaping, you're ducking. It sees your motion. You know, in fact, it's kind of funny when you. You bend over to pick up something, you see it, your avatar on the screen bends over and picks up something. It really mirrors you. Henry was complaining. Now, he's 16. He's got fast reflexes, a little bit about latency. And this is a problem with these devices. They have to, recognize your body, figure out where you've moved, reflect it on the game, and ideally all do that within a millisecond or two so it doesn't feel like there's lag. This feels very fast, faster than the Wii or the Move, yet he was complaining about lag a little bit. Yeah, the other thing you should be aware of is it takes a lot of room. We had to move furniture. you're standing 6 to 10 feet away from your TV. It takes over the living room. So we had to move the coffee table out of the way. In fact, I'm thinking of moving all the furniture out of the living room because then it will be much more fun and much less dangerous. You don't want to bark your shins on your coffee table
while
you're dancing or running or jumping. I think some games will not translate well. There's a driving game, and I think you have fewer controls. Really, all you can do is steer, leap, and lean, and so you don't have control of gears and so forth. I wonder if first person shooters like Halo will be much fun. I doubt it. Maybe. I'll have to see. They're Lucas apparently is preparing a lightsaber game to go with this, which might be kind of cool. Okay. I know you're a Star Wars fan.
Oh yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Jennifer liked it a lot. Henry liked it a lot. I think we'll be using it. Now, I'll let you know once we get the dancing game. Jennifer's very excited about the dancing game. I don't know. I don't know why. I think she wants to see me make a fool of myself. So latency could be an issue in first-person shooters, certainly not for a dancing game. It is a little bit with the action games, like, jumping. But it's fun. And I'll tell you what, it's exercise. It does get people off the couch and into the game. And maybe that's not such a bad thing.
I think it's probably a good thing.
A good use of your big screen TV. You will want a big screen TV for this.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, because you want to be life size.
You were doing 60-inch Curo?
Yeah, that was just about right.
Yeah.
Although, I need another 10, 15 feet to back up.
Right.
Obviously, you'll have to be careful. As with the Wii, we heard reports very early on that people had accidentally thrown the nunchuck or the Wiimote at the screen and broke it. In fact, they shortly after the Wii came out, started offering free wrist straps for owners and really do encourage you to wear the wrist straps. Well, there's no wrist strap here because it's your body. There's no controller here. It's just you. On the other hand, if you got a little overexcited and ran into the TV, it would probably be worse than if you just threw a nunchuck at it. They do tell you if you get too close to the TV, it says, back up, back up, back up. I mean, it really does let you know.
Wow.
And I'm sure that's why. You're really supposed to use it fairly distant. Jay Howe's asking in the chat room if you could use it with a projector. I think, well, of course you could, but you'd be in the way of the projector beam because you're standing right in front of the TV. You could use it with a rear projection, or I guess if you had the projector over your head aiming down, but that wouldn't be a good idea, would it, Scott? Because you'd get weird parallax.
Yes, you don't want to get too far out of center because, you get something called keystoning.
Keystoning.
Right.
I mean, they correct for it, but still, I don't think that's ideal.
But you don't want to use that. This I say all the time. If you're using a front projector and you have it off center and you're at a weird angle and the geometry of the picture isn't right, you can correct it electronically, but you lose a lot of resolution. Right. You lose a lot of detail. It's not a good idea.
Scott's here to answer your questions, get your home theater questions ready. The very first question we will answer when we come back in about 20 after is going to be plasma or LCD. We'll just get that out of the way, right?
Right away.
Lisa, my boss out here is buying a new big screen TV, and she wants to know.
We were talking about that.
She wants to know what to get. And she originally said plasma because I think she'd heard us talk about how much we like plasma. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, you ought to look at the LCD. So we'll get the definitive answer from the man. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536 from the Ultimate AV Magazine. Scott Wilkinson is here to answer your questions. We will do it all show long. If you have to have a technology question that's not home theater answered, you can call in, and Rebecca will we can take a couple of those. But really, I really want to focus on the home theater questions. This is a chance, really, for people to get their questions answered. 888-827-5536. Also, we have a website, great website, and a chat room. Now, the website is techguylabs.com. James DeRuvo, who keeps those show notes, is a scoutmaster. He's out on a scout camping expedition right now. So the notes won't be updated till later in the weekend, probably after Sunday. But you can still go to that webpage, techguylabs.com. Click the chat link there if you'd like to get in our chat room. Lots of great people. It's always a lot of fun in the chat room. You can also see live video of the show. And since Scott's in studio with me, usually you sound the same, but usually you're on Skype, not in
studio.
That's
right. That's right.
So to have you sitting right here is a little disconcerting for me. I can see the back of your head. I don't understand that.
That's really fun. It's really fun being here.
It's kind of fun when people come in. We have an open studio. We have visitors almost every day. We actually have somebody visiting from Burbank today.
In fact, my hometown.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of neat because he works in television.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's put the prompter up so I can read it. And now I know what to say from now on. when people come in into the studio, I think they often say, this is very disconcerting because I'm 3D.
You're
not
real
only
3D.
I'm no longer a disembodied voice, and you can see the back of my head. It's weird. Real 3D. Scott Wilkinson, home theater, coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I got my own prompter operator in here. It's too bad I don't use prompter. Bron, who is visiting from Burbank, I didn't know this. He did the teleprompter for the Oscars last year. That must have been fun. He says he's the guy who said it was okay to tell the Uma Oprah Oprah Uma joke. I thought it was funny. I don't know. Uma and Oprah didn't like it so much, but maybe he drove it into the ground was really the problem. Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We've got our great home theater expert in here, Mr. Scott Wilkinson of the Ultimate AV Magazine and Home Theater Magazine. How long have you been doing this, Scott?
Oh, at least 20 years.
You started as a musician.
I did. I started as a musician originally, and I went to work as a journalist in the pro audio field. In fact, that's why I'm up here in the Bay Area. I was going to the Audio Engineering Society convention in San Francisco at Moscone Center, AES. And ran into a bunch of old friends there. That was really a lot
That's
of fun.
Neat.
And in fact, we had an electronic musician editor's reunion.
Wow.
Because there were a bunch
that
of
That was
us.
The magazine, Electronic that
was,
Musician.
Electronic Musician was the magazine I worked on mostly. I was a technical editor there for 10 years. And so it was great to walk around the show floor and see my editorial buddies and my business buddies. I ran into the Bias people, Christine and Steve Berkeley.
They're local up here.
They're local here in your hometown, and they were showing some great stuff, including, dig this, a program that declips. So if you record something, some audio, and you the level is too hot, it clips.
If I did this, you could hear it clipping.
Exactly.
Sorry, everybody just went, wow. but you see, at that point, what's happened, if you look at a waveform, it normally would look nice and curved at the top of the waveform. You cut the top off of the waveform,
like,
and that's
gave
where
it
that
a buzz cut.
That's where that dirty noise comes from. That's just a square wave. But I don't understand how it could declip something.
Well, I'm not sure either. It's still in definitely early beta, apparently, so they're not. They weren't giving a lot of detail about it. I
guess
it
could fill in the
it would interpolate. It would fill in the missing information.
Get rid of the square anyway, because the square is what gives it that bzzz.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of high harmonics, lots of loud overtones, which you don't want. damage your hearing, in fact,
right,
with that. So right. Anyway, that was pretty
cool. I hope
I
didn't damage anybody's hearing. I don't think so. We have so many limiters and compressors all along the chain.
Exactly.
I doubt very much that could have done anything to anybody. But anyway, it did sound noisy and dirty, I presume.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, good to me.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Like it.
So I was doing pro audio for a long time. And then I got involved in consumer electronics and home theater in particular about 20 years or so ago. And ended up going more in that direction. And
that's great.
It's great fun. It's a lot of fun.
We don't normally focus a whole show on any particular topic, but mm-hmm. I think it's kind of fun once in a while. And I know home theater is such an interest for people. It's confusing because there's so many choices, although fewer choices than there used to be.
Well, I suppose that's true. Sure. Because there's no longer any. Well, there are very few rear projection TVs. So you don't really look at those except for Mitsubishi. They're the only ones left. You really have flat panels, LCD or plasma, and this is the perennial
question.
That's
the choice, LCD or plasma. And now all the LCDs, they used to be backlit with fluorescent bulbs. Now they're all backlit with LEDs, right?
I wouldn't say all or even almost all. There's still plenty that
are... The
cheap ones are not, exactly. The more
expensive
ones.
It's funny because the club I go to, the TV in the locker room died, and for a long time they didn't replace it. I could see they didn't want to spend the money, and they bought the cheapest LG I've ever seen. And I have to say, you can tell.
You can tell.
You really can tell. I didn't think you could tell, but you can tell on a flat mm-hmm. panel. So mm-hmm. I guess you get what you pay for. Although there are some companies like Vizio, for instance, that have a good price but still give you decent quality.
Vizio is a great value, particularly their LED backlit or edge-lit LCDs. I've never been that fond of their fluorescent-lit LCDs, but their LED backlit and edge-lit TVs are very nice, particularly for the money.
I know there's no, one answer, LCD or plasma.
Right.
But we got to address it.
It's true.
And so, you and I both have plasmas as our primary TV. Mm-hmm. I love that Kuro. You talked me into buying the pricey, but, discontinued Pioneer Kuro TV. It was the last of the line.
And you're glad you did, aren't you?
Couldn't be happier. And even for the Kinect, it looks good. but nowadays I think the LED backlit LCDs are approaching the quality of plasma, aren't they?
They are, absolutely, in terms of black levels.
So what are the differences between plasma and LCDs? Black levels one. How dark the blacks, are they black, or are they kind of light gray?
Kind of gray, yeah. Exactly. And you can really tell that if you watch any space stuff, which I watch a lot of space stuff, right? You see the black of space and the star fields of Star Trek, Star Wars, any sci-fi outer space movie, and I watch plenty of those. Yes, you can really tell. Also, when you're watching movies, real movies are a wider aspect ratio than modern high-definition TVs, and so you have black bars on the top
and
bottom.
You always will, yeah.
You always will. So the question is, how black are those black bars? Do they disappear from your consciousness? And if the black levels are not really good, they never will. You'll see these gray bars, these dark gray bars, and you'll be aware of them all the time. And for me, that's kind of distracting.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that black levels, they determine how much the picture pops out. And even if it's a bright scene, like on the snow or something, it just looks less washed out. If the TV is capable of good black levels, you're going to get a much punchier picture. So black levels are very important, and LEDs have gone a long way towards correcting that problem.
Now, this is confusing because they're LCDs, but they're lit by LEDs.
Correct.
And so people often say LED TVs, and it's not an LED. It's an LCD with the backlighting is LED.
Correct.
And then you've got the fully backlit LEDs, which people were doing a few years ago, and now everybody seems to be doing edge light.
And the only reason for that is that edge lighting allows the TV to be much thinner.
We still haven't answered the question, folks, but we will when we come back. Also, Bill, we're going to get to you. He wants to know about sound bars. Coming up, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
We'll be right back.
This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Stamps.com. Why wait in line at the post office when you can print your own official U.S. postage right from your Windows PC and your printer? You don't need a special ink. You don't need a postage meter. You just need Stamps.com for a no-risk trial offer worth $100, including $45 free postage. Go to Stamps.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use my name, Leo. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, with me, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater wizard. He's going to be here all 3 hours answering your home theater questions.
Looking forward to it. It's going to be so much fun.
We still haven't decided, plasma or LCD. I think there is no right answer, is there?
No, there isn't. It depends on your circumstances.
But is plasma more expensive?
No.
It's not?
Generally not.
For the same size screen?
Yeah. LCD used to be more expensive, then it achieved price parity, and then LED backlights or edge lights, as we were talking about earlier, brought the price back up. But I'd say they're comparable. They're not tremendously different in price.
Would you recommend 3D? I do notice 3D TVs cost a little bit more.
They do. Now, that costs a little bit more, and I was talking with Lisa about it, and
she's a sports fan.
Yes, and she's a Comcast subscriber, and Comcast is one of the three carriers that now carries 3D content, particularly ESPN 3D.
Ah.
So she might very well want that. Another reason to get 3D TV, even if you're not interested in 3D, is that 3D TVs are typically the premium models, and so they're going to actually be better performers on 2D content. So even if you don't want to watch 3D, I might recommend getting a 3D TV because it's going to be a better performer on 2D content.
Right.
We were talking over lunch yesterday about this, some of my friends were saying, 3D market penetration for 3D TVs is going to be in the single digits in 5 years.
That's nothing.
It was just nothing. And another guy said,
and if you don't have penetration that's at least 50%, I don't think you get a lot of content.
That's right.
I mean, there are movies being made in 3D, but you got to have a market or you're not going to do it. Look at Lucas. George Lucas didn't put Star Wars out on Blu-ray until just now.
Yeah.
Because he said, we did it too early on DVD, and we didn't sell enough copies, so we waited until there was critical mass, there were enough Blu-ray players for us to do it, and I think that the same thing's going to happen with 3D. You'll see a lot of people say, well, we could put Avatar out 3D. Actually, they did.
Or they will.
Yeah, and that's mostly, I think, Jim Cameron's really, really pushing 3D.
Really pushing. Well, a lot of the studios and manufacturers are, too, and another guy in our conversation.
Manufacturers, I understand. Studios, why? They're pushing it in the theater, but I would think that they wouldn't want you to have 3D TVs because they would want you to force you to come to the theater.
I always thought that too,
but
I was
not.
Very surprised. It's not true. They want to have 3D in the home as well. I just got a DEG, a Digital Entertainment Group report that said 40 3D Blu-ray titles out for the buying season this year.
Okay, 40,
which is 10 times as much as we've had up till now.
But it's out of like 10,000 movies.
Well, sure, of course.
let's be realistic.
Another guy on that conversation said, no, he thinks it'll be 100% by in 5 years, and not because everyone wants 3D, but because manufacturers are just going to put it into their TVs anyway.
Right. And I think that's clear. They're not waiting to see if we want to buy it. They're just doing it.
No, they're just doing it.
Although they are, again, charging a premium. If
they
were the same price, I could say, oh, yeah, we'll get it just in case.
Right. And that will happen because, as with all digital technology, we know, it drops tremendously once you start stamping things out. I've always said the digital technology drops in high quality. Digital technology drops in price as you stamp out of millions and millions of chips. High quality analog technology never will because it's always inherently expensive.
So plasma, if you can afford it and you really want the best home theater experience and you can darken the room.
Yeah, the main point there is light control. See, plasma. LCD suffers from a number of problems that plasma doesn't, and LCD manufacturers have addressed those problems. They've solved them, in some cases, by a Band-Aid that causes other problems, but plasmas don't have those problems to begin with. Black level is one of them. Motion blur is another one.
Yeah, see, now Lisa loves sports and action movies, so,
right.
So she might not like sports in an LCD.
That's right. That's right. Now, on LCDs, the way that they got around that problem was they created what's called 120 hertz or 240 hertz LCD TVs. And what that does is it takes the 60 frames that you're getting in per second, and it synthesizes new frames in between them, calculating where objects in motion would be in those new frames. So it does sharpen up the motion detail quite a bit. but it causes another artifact, which is often called the soap opera effect.
It looks a little plasticky.
It looks
video-y.
Plastic. It looks video-y.
Yeah.
And this is a big problem with movies. Movies are shot typically on film.
At 24 frames a second. And
here
so
you're
they're already up converting them.
Exactly. But then you up convert them even more, and they look like they were shot on video like a soap opera.
Yeah, and I don't want that. I'm
well,
sorry.
Well, you know, this is going to be one of my poll questions. I've just started a new feature on UAV, on ultimateavmag.com, which asks important questions, questions that people feel strongly about, and this is going to be one of them. It's how important, how much does, well, is frame interpolation, which is the technical term for this, a godsend or the devil's spawn?
And
people
feel strongly about it. As with all these questions, though, it's not black and white. I mean, they're pros and cons. So, and the same thing with plasma LCD.
That's right. So if you have, the basic question is, if you have a lot of ambient light, you watch during the day, you have big plate glass windows or whatever, and you can't control the light very well, an LCD might be a better choice because it's brighter. It puts out more light than a plasma, which is one reason why LCDs fly off the shelves at retailers when plasmas don't. Because they look brighter.
They look better in the store.
Exactly. Now, you know, your living room, hopefully, is not a showroom floor, which is super brightly lit.
Well, it's funny because when I came into the club with this brand new TV, I looked at it, I said, ooh. And I looked at the settings and it was set for vivid.
Yes.
Which is the setting they do in the store to
Correct.
Make it look better in a brightly lit environment.
Correct.
I immediately moved it to movie.
Good for you. That's exactly what you
looks
need to do.
Looks a lot better.
That's exactly what you need to do. And that's exactly what anyone who buys a new TV needs to do. If they do nothing else in terms of adjusting the picture or whatever, you go into the menu. There's a parameter called picture mode or sometimes just mode. And it's going to, out of the box, it's going to be set to vivid or dynamic or super bright, you know, put on your shades. And you want to move that to, you want to change that to movie or cinema, which is the typical best setting. And it's going to look dimmer. And for a moment, you might
initially
go,
you go, ooh,
that's kind of dim and dull. Give it a minute. You know, just let your eyes get used to it, and it's going to be a much more accurate, much better looking picture in the long run. And it's not going to wear a plasma in particular. If you drive a plasma really hard in vivid mode, you know, it's going to wear out. It has phosphors, and it does have a finite life, and it's going to drive it a little harder than it needs to be. So that's another reason to do it. If you have good light control and really, if you have good light control in your room and or you watch mostly at night or whatever, then I generally recommend plasma. I just think it looks better. It doesn't have the inherent problems that LCDs do and have now corrected by Band-Aids one way or another. Then that's the way to go. If you are going to get an LCD, absolutely, if you can afford it, an LED illuminated LCD is the way to go.
Scott Wilkinson is here, Ultimate AV Magazine. Bill, you're next. We're going to talk about the soundbar systems. Are they a reasonable alternative to 5.1 or 7.1 sound? Multiple speakers, in other words. But first, I want to talk a little bit about backing up with Carbonite. You know, I know we're talking about home theater, and I guess you don't have to back up your TV. But if you have a computer and you have data, and nowadays more and more of our data is on our computers, our pictures of our babies, our weddings, music, financial records, even email. You know, a lot of times email is what we store all of our phone numbers and addresses in. That's where I get my address. I say, well, let me search for that in email. You got to back up. Carbonite Online Backup's the way to go. It's really easy to start with Carbonite. You don't have to be a tech guy. Here's what you do. You go to carbonite.com. You type in your email address. You create a password. You use my name, Leo, for the special offer. You're done. Now, Carbonite's going to take care of the rest. You will be starting to back up automatically and safely off-site with encryption, so it's safe whenever you're connected to the internet. And when that disaster happens, and you know it will, all hard drives die eventually, you'll be able to get your files back in just a few simple steps, even with an iPhone or BlackBerry app. Those are free. Or on any computer, you log onto your Carbonite account. And for $55 a year, you get unlimited backup for PCs or Mac. Carbonite.com. Don't worry. Sleep right tonight. Get Carbonite. No credit card needed for this 15-day free trial. And by the way, do use the offer code Leo because you'll get 2 free months when you decide to buy. Back it up to get it back at Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo. Bill's in Pasadena. You're very patient. Thank you, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
Hey, it's great talking with you guys today.
Hey, Bill.
I have a question for you, Scott. Let me paint a little bit of a picture. I live in a condo with my wife. I have a 50-inch Panasonic plasma that I love. Had it for about 3 years. but we're listening to it out of the little speakers. And with movies and stuff, you know, I know it can be better. I've got a Carver Research AV receiver. And
oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That I bought that like about 15 years ago. So I'm thinking, for these sake, should I use the Carver? I have two big Polk speakers. Should I move that over and then, you know, get the center channel? Because I've never used it for home theater. I've just been using it for stereo.
Does he even need a center channel if he's got what a great stereo? He's got Carver, Polk.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it doesn't have any HDMI. So I'm wondering, should I ditch the Carver, get something new with HDMI? Or should I get a sound bar and keep it ultra simple? I mean, I'm totally confused.
He's got two important starting parts. Can't he get maybe optical or something else out of the Blu-ray player that would go into the Carver?
I'm sorry, you have a Blu-ray player, right?
No, I just have a regular DVD player. I don't have Blu-ray yet.
Okay, does that have HDMI out?
No.
The DVD player? Because more modern up-converting DVD players do. If it doesn't, then, you know...
Go into the AV receiver.
Yeah, go into the AV receiver. You won't get the...
Well, look at he. Let's assume this. He's going to buy a Blu-ray, which will have HDMI out. Will also have optical out,
and right, which will not carry the full resolution new high resolution.
So he really does want to get a new AV receiver along with a new Blu-ray.
Well, that would be the ideal situation. Of course, it depends on your budget. Then there's the question of the speakers. You have these two big Polk speakers, which are fine. You don't need a center. There's something you can do called Phantom Center. Which you don't do anything.
I just have two speakers and I never even notice. It sounds fine to me. The voices are coming out of their mouths.
Uh-huh.
Maybe my brain's doing it.
Brain is doing it. Yeah. That's what's called the phantom center technique. Because really, the voices are somebody in the center of the screen, the voices are coming out both speakers equally. Your brain says, it's in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. That's called stereo. It's called stereo imaging. Left, right, center. You don't need 5. Is 5.1 a gimmick? Come on.
No.
Come on, say it is.
No. Absolutely not. I refuse to say that.
All right, Bill. Hang on. We'll finish up this conversation and talk about what these soundbars do.
Yeah.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater expert from Ultimate AV Magazine. Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Anyone finally can make his or her own professional looking website. Slick, easy, simple with Squarespace.com. I use it. My friends use it. I want you to use it too. You try it right now. Absolutely free. Get 2 weeks free. You don't even need a credit card. Squarespace.com. And when you decide to buy, use the offer code TechGuy. You'll get 10% off the life of your account. Squarespace.com. Offer code TechGuy. One word. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's me. Sorry, Scott. I didn't mean to make you jump there.
No.
Scott Wilkinson's here, home theater expert from the Ultimate AV Magazine. He's the editor-in-chief there. And, you know, somebody was saying in the chat room, we should talk about audio as well. And we are right now. We're talking about the sound bar
right.
with Bill in Pasadena. So Bill is obviously an audiophile. He's got Polk speakers and a Carver amp. I mean, that's this audiophile-grade stereo system.
It is. And a sound bar is not going to be up to that level.
Even a good Polk makes sound
bars. Polk makes sound bars. They make great sound bars.
But not as good.
Yeah, not as good as these standalone speakers. I mean, the sound bars all have, you know, 2-3-inch drivers in them.
Right.
Now,
some of them have subwoofers.
Some of them have separate subwoofers, and I certainly recommend that. You were saying before that you wanted a subwoofer for enhanced bass, and you really do, especially with movies. Movies have a lot of low-frequency
explosions.
Content. Yeah, explosions and dinosaur roars and rocket blasts.
If you don't watch movies with explosions, if you watch art films, you don't need a subwoofer.
Right.
But if you watch movies with explosions, and almost everybody has a dinosaur or two nowadays.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, getting back to soundbars. I'm sorry?
Are you saying since the Carver system, like I said, is about 15 years old, I mean, HDMI didn't even exist back then. Are you saying I should probably replace it maybe with a more modern, like a Denon or something like that?
Well, you certainly could, but you could also use the Carver. Now, it's 15 years old. I don't know if it has analog in or even it probably has optical in, right?
It does, yeah.
Okay, and what about multi-channel analog in, like a 5.1 analog input?
That's a good question. I believe
it would have like,
but I can't confirm that.
Yeah. that would be the only way you could get the full high-resolution audio off of a Blu-ray player. And you need to get a Blu-ray player that has multi-channel analog outputs in order to connect to those multi-channel analog inputs on that receiver.
So when you do HDMI, which is the default way to connect now everything, mm-hmm. it's a digital connection. It's mm-hmm. almost like putting your AV receiver, TV, and everything else on a computer network where mm-hmm. it's sending the data. And so when you play back the Blu-ray, no matter what kind of sound you want from the Blu-ray, it can send that data to the receiver.
Absolutely.
The problem he's going to have with this Carver is it probably doesn't understand most of those formats, right?
Well, which is why I'm suggesting if you want to hear the full advantage of Dolby True HD and DTS HD soundtracks.
It's not going to come across that analog.
Yes,
optical.
It is.
Oh, it is.
Not across optical. No, not across optical.
So
it is across analog because it's going to get decoded in the player.
So the DVD or the Blu-ray player decodes it.
Yes.
So it's most of these are capable of doing that if it has that five
channels.
If
it has that six channels
six
out,
channels
5.1 out.
So exactly. In other words, it does the 5.1 decoding.
Correct.
And then you send it to your amp for amplification only.
Correct.
It's an analog signal now coming
correct.
Into the amp.
That's correct. Now, it requires six wires to go from the Blu-ray right. player to the HDMI is much, much easier. If you don't mind not hearing the absolute perfect best sound you can get, using optical, as Leo suggests, is perfectly
You'll
fine
You'll get
as
digital
well.
Sound into the Carver, into the but the Carver doesn't understand all these new Dolby formats
correct.
And so forth.
But
so it can only get the standard stereo, basically.
Right, and it will automatically. If
yeah.
If all you're sending is optical, it'll only send...
Left, right?
Well, 5.1.
Oh, it will send 5.1.
Yes, but lossy. The compression, the audio compression...
Will the Carver understand it?
Yeah, probably. If it has an optical... Now, 15 years? Yeah, I would say probably. I'd have to look at it specifically, but...
So you understand what we're saying, Bill, is that your receiver has to understand how to decode what it's getting from the Blu-ray.
Yes.
To play it back.
Right.
It probably doesn't. Does it have five channel sound? It only has stereo sound out, right?
No, it's a five channel. It's in fact.
It does. Oh well, then it will understand. It
will
right?
understand.
Sure.
Standard regular Dolby Digital and regular DTS, what's called core.
So
DTS.
Does he tell the Blu-ray to do that, or does it do it automatically?
It will probably do it automatically.
Okay.
The answer to the question of the sound bar, though, is, you know, in a small space, and you said you and your wife live in a condo, right?
Yes, condo. Where the couch is situated from the plasma, we're probably sitting maybe 10 feet away.
You know,
I can't blast the place because, again, I have a common wall, so I can't be really
yeah. –
I don't want to turn it into a movie theater, but I'd like at least
– right.
three channels, but you're saying I probably don't even need a center?
You don't need one. No. Now, if you want to get... Now, people say that sound is half of the 50% of the movie experience, and I agree, it is. And people mix movies to the audio for movies to really take advantage of surround. Some people in the chat room are saying, oh, there aren't very many movies with anything in the back channels. And in some cases, that's true. But in other cases, it's really not. And there are things flying around the room. One of the features that we have on Ultimate AV is called Ultimate Demos. And in that, our movie reviewer, David Vaughn, specifies particular scenes that says, listen to this surround sound. Things are flying all over the room. So it really is a good thing to have for the immersive experience. And that's really what we're talking about with home theater is you want the immersive experience. You want a big picture. You want surround sound. Sound bars can get you a fair... part of the way towards surround sound by providing the front three channels, front, left, right, and center, and then providing a pseudo surround either by bouncing sound waves off your walls. If you have a kind of a closed room, a rectangular room, a lot of them do it that way. Others use phasing and other weird tricks. The Polk is one that you don't need walls to reflect the sound off of to get a surround sound effect. Now, you're not going to hear things behind you. Really, which you will with real speakers, real surround speakers. But the sound bars are really pretty good these days at giving you an immersive or a semi-immersive experience. Polk is a good brand. Yamaha is a good brand. Marantz is a good brand. So I would say that would be one good way. You certainly do want a subwoofer. Absolutely. What are the Polk speakers that you have?
They, you know, they're tower speakers. I don't know the model number of them, but they're pretty, they're pretty beefy.
Mm-hmm.
The amp, well, it's the AV405. I just can't remember the name of the receiver.
Ah. More with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Coming up, stay right here. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet. To get DSL Extreme, I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, and we are doing a home theater show today.
The home theater extravaganza.
Kind of a departure, but, you know, we talk about tech, all kinds of tech, and home theater is one of them. In fact, nowadays, home theater, you know, that TV is a computer. It's often a... pretty technical, the connections, as you can tell, as we've been talking for the last hour, if you've been listening. Scott Wilkinson is the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine. He's also a columnist for Home Theater Magazine and an expert on both sound and video, which is nice. We got some more sound calls for you. In fact,
great. Let's go.
Probably get to the sound call. Well, we're going to interpose it with a video call, but we'll get another sound call. Mike wants to know about... amps, best amps for his Bose speakers. But before we get to Mike, Eric in Garden Grove, he is buying his first high-def TV.
And all right.
He couldn't have timed it better. Hi, Eric. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy with Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo. Hey, Scott. How are you guys?
Great.
We're doing great. Congratulations.
Thank you. So I got three TVs in front of me, on a website, and I can't decide. I have a Sony Bravia 40 inches LCD, and the model number is KDL40EX400. Mm-hmm. That's an LCD, and it's for $599. Mm-hmm. And then another two Samsung, these are plasma. One is 50 inches, and the other one is 50 inches also. But the only difference is one is 1080p, and the other one's 720p. And
oh,
the price
great.
Difference, and the price difference is the 1080p is $849, and the 720p is $699. And this is for my bedroom, so I can decide what will be the best choice.
Is the LCD, the Sony LCD, illuminated by LED?
No.
Can you tell that? It is not.
No.
And can you control the light in your bedroom?
Oh, yes.
And how far away are you from the TV when you're watching in your bedroom?
Not so far. Probably 6 feet.
Hmm. Well, believe it or not, a 50-inch TV would be just about the right size.
Mm-hmm.
A 40-inch would seem pretty small.
Okay.
Ultimately. Also, if you can control the light, plasma is very good. Samsung is great for plasma. As far as 720p versus 1080p is concerned, this is another perennial question. And if you're far enough away, you can't see the difference in detail between the two. However, most content, high-def content, is 1080. It's either 1080p from Blu-ray or 1080i from broadcast HDTV on cable or satellite or over the air, wherever you get it. So the answer to that, my answer to that is you want to get 1080p if you can, because then you avoid what are called scaling artifacts. If you watch HDTV on a 720p set, it has to scale it down to 720p. That could result, doesn't always, but it could result in what are called scaling artifacts, softness, some jaggies, things like that. So I would probably recommend for you the 1080p Samsung plasma if you can spend the extra bucks.
All right. Got it. That was my only question.
Great. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Got it.
Mike in New York. Now we're going to talk Bose. Hey, Mike. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
Yes, good afternoon. I own a vintage Phase Linear 400 power amplifier.
Very nice.
It's Bose 901 series speakers.
We were just talking about this.
Man, you're taking me back to college.
Now, I would like to hook it up to my TV, but unfortunately I have a Sansui LCD TV, and they're telling us that we cannot disconnect the sound. We cannot disconnect the internal to provide external sound.
So you're going to always hear the Sansui speakers.
I'm not sure why that is. I mean, what's your source device? Are you just using the TV's own tuner, internal tuner?
Yes, sir. I would like to hook up external power.
Well, okay. Does the TV have an audio output?
Yes, it does. But Sansui says that even with a DAC, we cannot do it. They won't allow us to connect.
You can't go into the Sansui's menu system and say, disable internal speakers.
No, cannot do that, sir.
Well, then I don't know what to tell you. I would say in
well,
that
here's
case,
how he would do it. He would stop using the Sansui tuner, right?
Right, and buy a
new TV,
mm-hmm,
or
right.
buy do you have cable or satellite, or do you have a TiVo? Because any of those will have a tuner in them,
right?
And just have that go into video one
of your. Well, you have
turn the Sansui all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Take the audio out of this external box.
Now wait a minute. The phase linear amp is just a power amp, right?
Just a power amp.
Oh, you need a preamp,
then
too.
You need a preamp or a receiver.
I have a...
Oh, what do you have?
A Gemini.
Okay. Because it has multiple inputs, right?
Yes, full inputs.
Yeah, okay. So you take that. You get either a cable or satellite. Do you get
in other
cable
words,
or satellite?
We don't have to ask him any more questions. Okay. Just disintermediate the TV tuner.
Right.
Just use the TV as a display.
Correct.
Which is what most modern home theater setups are doing. They're
Correct.
Not using the TV as a TV. They're using it as a display.
Correct.
Hooked up to something else that's doing the tuning, whether it's the cable, satellite, or TiVo.
Correct.
And if you do that, then you control the audio because you turn the audio down on your TV.
Exactly.
And you get the audio into your speakers.
Correct.
From whatever this tuner box
Correct.
Is. So stop using it as a TV or buy a better TV. Those are pretty old TVs.
Yeah.
Laura, Burbank, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there, Leo and Scott.
Hey, I'm calling from my hometown.
Yeah. Hey, look, I've got an Onkyo dual zone receiver, but when mm-hmm. we use the second zone outside, it shorts out the receiver and the whole receiver shuts down.
Ouch.
Yeah, so we can't use it. I mean, we can't use the second zone.
Huh. Now, what? When you say short out, does it... Does this happen all the time or just when it's raining or?
No, all the time. So we were able to use outdoor speakers for about a year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, a couple years ago, just, you know, if you use it.
Sounds like it's broken.
It sounds like it's broken. It could be that the cables that went outside got corroded.
Receivers have fuses in them, don't they?
Some of them do.
They're designed in a case like this. Let's say there's a short somewhere to cut out.
Sure.
To protect
sure.
themselves.
Yeah, because you don't want them to burn up. There is some current running through them because they have amplifiers in them.
So maybe that's what's going on.
It could be. I'm thinking if it's the outdoor ones and it worked for a year or two, maybe something got wet. That's what I'm thinking.
And the receiver's just saying, I'm not going to go there.
I'm not going to go there. Yeah, right.
I don't think so. You've got rainwater.
So what should she do? It sounds like either repair it or buy a new one.
Yeah, exactly. What I would say.
Jerry, Toronto, Canada. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jerry.
How you doing, guys?
Scott Wilkinson's here, our home theater expert.
Hey, Jerry.
Yep. How you doing? My two favorite shows on my favorite network. I must be in heaven.
I should mention that as long as you bring it up, that Scott does a great podcast for home theater geeks. It's called Home Theater Geeks. and it's available. He does it Monday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time at live.twit.tv. So you can watch live, but of course, it's a podcast, so you can download it anytime.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is go to twit.tv/HTG.
Home Theater Geeks.
And you could subscribe on iTunes, Zune Marketplace, anywhere the fighter podcasts are sold. Except it's free. So what can we do for you, Jerry?
Okay, my question is, up here in Toronto, a speaker line called Martin Logan started selling, and it's called the Motion Series of Speakers. Has Scott ever heard of this company or the series?
Oh, absolutely. Martin Logan is one of the absolute premier makers of what are called electrostatic speakers.
Now, you were mocking these.
I don't think I quite broke that. Not mocking them.
But in the break in the chat room, asked you about electrostatic speakers,
magnaplaners.
Some audiophiles adore these.
I love them. They just love them. I know a lot of people who just love them.
So is it a matter of taste?
Yeah, partly that. They're very clean sounding. They're very transparent sounding. Some people have a problem with the fact that, unlike regular, quote-unquote, regular speakers, which have these discrete circular drivers that give you more or less kind of a point source of sound, these magnetic electrostatic speakers have big diaphragms that vibrate and send out the sound in a big wave. And some people complain that the imaging, this pinpoint specificity of sound, is not as apparent on electrostatic speakers. But then there are a ton of audiophiles who swear by them. So I'm not going to diss them. I don't have them myself. They tend to be kind of expensive. But Martin Logan is certainly a premier maker of this type of speaker. And they're very well regarded.
Audiophiles are interesting. It's almost religious because you can't sometimes hear the differences. They can.
Yes, so they're called golden ears.
I can't because I'm ancient, and you're as ancient as I. So both of us have lost the high end. Maybe we don't hear the spaciousness that they hear or something like that.
It could very well be. Yeah, exactly right.
Sometimes it's specious logic where you say, well, I have these magical golden cables that cost $10,000, and I know they're making a difference. Maybe if you did an A-B comparison with somebody who didn't know you had spent $10,000 on those cables, you wouldn't hear the difference. They wouldn't hear the difference.
This is a huge argument, and certainly an area of topic of conversation.
How much of it's psychological?
Exactly. If you just spent $10,000 on cables, you better damn well hear a difference.
You've got a vested interest
in
hearing
exactly
a difference.
Exactly right. Now, there's a great story about James Randi, you know, this
the amazing Randi,
who is actually a debunker of myths. And we'll talk about that.
He's offered a fairly large reward for anybody who can prove. And no one has taken him up on this, including the big companies that make these cables.
Well, there's a story about that.
Oh, we'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking home theater with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy, all day today. So we will get more computer questions next show. But if you have a home theater question, I'd love to hear from you. So it's Scott, 8888, Ask Leo. That is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Callers from all over the world. We just had our Canadian call.
Excellent.
Jeff's next. He's in San Francisco, California, with a call and question for Scott Wilkinson. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
Ever since I graduated from Web TV, I've used my TV as a monitor. Mm-hmm. Now I'm ready to build my first computer, which I'm calling a living room computer because I do want a big old computer sitting next to my TV set.
Don't we all?
I'm not a gamer, and I'm not going to put a TV card in it. But I want it to be able to handle any kind of streaming or whatever is going to be coming over the internet. So my question is, A, are there any considerations I need to take into account when picking a video card as far as refresh rates on the TV or something? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know addressing this. B, should I wait for the forthcoming Sandy Bridge CPU, because I heard there's some excitement about the GPU being part of the CPU chip. I heard that there's some kind of excitement in the home theater crowd.
I don't know that. I am not as up on home theater PCs as I am on some many other aspects. But
Sandy Bridge will probably be out early 2011.
Uh-huh.
It's basically an Intel Westmere chip with, as you say,
a graphics processor.
I don't, you know, this is done to reduce costs, not to improve performance.
Right.
So if you want a good GPU, Jeff, then you'd be just as well not to wait for Sandy Bridge, but mm-hmm. to use an existing Intel CPU and just get a good video card. Exactly. However, none of that is important for television watching because right. the TV doesn't use the GPU. The TV is very easy for the computer to do. It's not 3D rendering as in a video game. That's the challenge.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Just for streaming. I mean, right now I can watch podcasts like yours that look like they're high def, but if I put Hulu on, it's stop, start, stop, start.
And that's not the processor. That's your bandwidth.
Right. What are you connecting to internet wise? A cable or DSL?
Comcast cable, 16 to 20.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you know, Comcast will say 16 to 20, and that in the burst, that's true. And then as you get sustained download, it slows down. And depending on what else is going on, it may be the Hulu server itself is not keeping up. Who knows? But what you're seeing, that stopping and starting, that buffering, is not really conditioned by the speed of your processor or the speed of your video card. Unfortunately, that's
right.
what you're getting. And it wouldn't be any faster if you had the fastest computer, supercomputer in the world sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had a really slow computer, I guess it could be a problem. But any Core 2 processor, any relatively modern computer, you're going to be fine.
The issues that I would keep in mind are, A, you want that big computer that's sitting in your home theater to be as quiet acoustically as possible. So
if
you have a honking fan in there, that's going to be a bad deal.
That's a biggie.
L8300 right now, it's the loudest computer ever made, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want that sitting next to your TV.
No.
The other thing, of course, is you want a graphics card or some way to get HDMI out, and you want support for 1920 by 1080p video. And as long as you have those things, I think you're in good shape.
1920 by 1080.
That's the key, yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, if you get a big screen computer, you have much higher resolution.
That's right.
What you're asking of a home theater PC is really fairly easy for a computer to
that's
do.
That's right.
1080p monitor on your computer is like a fairly low quality monitor in many cases, you know.
Right. That's right.
Many laptops even do 1080p.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I really think that your home theater PC is a different kind of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it's issues about getting the tuner card to work with the software. My recommendation would be not to build your own, but to go out and buy something that's labeled as a home theater PC because that's all integrated together.
Yep.
They've figured out that this card will work with Microsoft's Media Center and this will all, and you're much more likely to have a good result than if you try to piece it together. Because, you know, frankly, you don't know if that video card works well with home theater, works well with this and that.
Unless you go out and do a bunch of research. And
well, he's doing the research, obviously.
If you're a DIY geek, then.
Yeah. And, you know, if Sandy Bridge turns out to be a really great home theater processor, then you'll start seeing HD PCs using Sandy Bridge early next year. You know, if you can wait till CES. That's coming up early January, first week in January. We'll be doing a show there both days, Saturday and Sunday, and believe you me, we'll be talking about home theater mm-hmm. and Sandy Bridge, and perhaps we'll be talking about systems that incorporate Sandy Bridge from home theater. The performance is good, and OnTech has a very good review of Sandy Bridge and says its performance is excellent. Generally, you know, we don't recommend GPUs built into the motherboard or built into the chipset or built into the chip itself, just because that's usually done to save money, not to improve performance. This might be an exception to that. Sandy Bridge is moving everything into the chip because it can talk faster than the chip and might actually give, I mean, I'm looking at the benchmarks. They look pretty good. But again, you're not really doing that much. You're just watching TV. That's easy. If you wanted to play video games on this computer and hooked up to your 60-inch monitor, maybe then. But even then, that's not a high frame rate a high resolution for a video game.
I don't know.
Gamers are often playing much higher resolution than, say, 1200.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break. We're coming back with more. We have Scott Wilkinson, our home theater expert, here with us. And in just a bit, we're going to talk about software playing back Blu-ray on a PC.
Mm.
Best way to play Blu-ray back on a PC. I guess that's something you'd have to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
Say right here, 8888 Ask Leo, if you've got a question for Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, our home theater episode. portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Backup done right. You got to back it up to get it back. So try Carbonite. Try it free right now. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo for 2 weeks free. You will like it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Scott Wilkinson's here. He's our home theater wizard, the expert, editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, columnist for Home Theater Magazine, and he joins us every week normally for a few minutes, but this time I thought we'd give him 3 hours.
Hey, I'm up in town. Thought I'd drop by. It's great fun.
Well, and we got a lot of home theater questions. Next, Ron in Missoula, Montana. Ron, welcome. Leo Laporte and Scott Wilkinson.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey.
Yep.
Hi there. Nice to talk to you guys. So I've got this home theater PC, and I just put in a Blu-ray OEM drive, so it doesn't come with any software. Any recommendations on what software to play the Blu-rays on the home theater PC? I'm using Windows 7, by the way.
Yeah, I must admit, this is not an area that I'm very familiar with, so I would be not really... I would certainly not be authoritative on this subject.
Well, I mean, I can tell you, I mean, obviously Windows Media will not, even on Windows 7. You have to get a program to do that. And there are a number of programs, you know, all of the big players who play back Blu-ray, play back DVDs have a Blu-ray version. Power DVD does, CyberLink. So, be honest with you, I had a Blu-ray player in my Dell Studio 17. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember, I think I did use, in fact, Power DVD, a PowerLink DVD, and I thought it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
There are little issues that come up playing back Blu-ray. For instance, this computer had an HDMI cable, but hooking it up to a HDMI TV, I wasn't able to play Blu-ray out because it didn't have HDCP. So there's copy protection.
Yes.
There's all sorts of issues. You do want a, if you're playing it back on a computer screen, you want a computer screen that can do at least 1,080 lines from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Most good screens will do, you know, something like 1920 by 1200 is very common.
Mm-hmm.
I think PowerLink is good. I mean, that's the only one I've used, but I thought it was very good. Nero has a program that does playback.
Mm-hmm.
Our chat room says Total Media Theater 3 works seamlessly with Media Center. So if you're using Media Center, then Total Media is probably a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think they all pretty much do the same thing, Ron.
I would think so.
My Dell can't. You know, I'm surprised, Ron, that your computer, if it came with a Blu-ray player, didn't come with some form of playback, even if it's
said
a limited edition.
A Blu-ray player.
Oh, you installed it yourself?
A drive.
I installed an OEM.
Got it. And the OEM didn't come with a disc with stuff?
Did not come with any software or anything.
Yeah. HP and Dell both use CyberLink. But there's some other choices as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can, in every case, they have, or at least almost every case I know of, they have a 30-day download. I would try it. See which one you like.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Ron. Chat room's very helpful in that kind of thing.
You bet.
We got a lot of people in the chat room. You could join us there by going to our website, techguylabs.com. Click the chat link, and you'll be thrown into our chat room with 600 other rabid fans.
Geeks.
They don't bite, I hope. Line 5 is Donald in Riverside. Donald, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Hey, very well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I've got a Samsung Plasma 50-inch. Mm-hmm. And for a while there, I was only using one of the HDMI ports on the TV. It currently has two. Mm-hmm. And I was just taking the HDMI out of my PS3 and putting it into the satellite box and vice versa. So I finally went out and... bought another HDMI cable, but now that I've plugged in the HDMI cable to the second port on the back of the TV, I'm finding that it's not nothing seeing the TV is not seeing either of the units, either the PS3 or the satellite. So I thought it was maybe a bad HDMI that I bought. Switched the cable, switched the port, switched the devices. Anything on port one and any cable on port one works. So it seems to be my HDMI port on the port 2 is not working. I was wondering, is there a setting that needs to be on, could the port have went bad? The TV's probably 4-5 years old.
Yeah, it sounds to me like input 2, HDMI input 2
broken.
Is broken. You've done all the troubleshooting things that I would recommend, which is trying different cables into input one and two, trying different devices on input one and two. If everything works on one and nothing works on two, sounds like the input on number two is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be it.
That's got to be it.
You did a good troubleshooting job.
Yes.
Hey, before we go on, Scott Wilkinson is here. We're taking calls for home theater questions, which means big screen TVs, but it also can mean surround sound.
Yep.
And it could mean weirdo stuff, too. If you, I mean, hey. Anything in your home theater. Could be like, what's the best popcorn maker? Or or theater-style seat. Or maybe, you know, what we don't talk about a lot, but we probably could, is screens for projectors.
Absolutely.
Because there is a lot of art and science in that as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
But before we do that, let me tell you about how to protect yourself. If you're using Windows, you need a good antivirus. And if you're not using Nod 32, you're missing out on the best. Don't just take my word for it. That's what CNET said. They gave it their editor's choice. 5 out of 5 stars. Nod 32 from ESET. It's easy to remember. Just think of no open doors. It locks your system down, and that's what you need. NOD32 from ESET, ESET software. Not just from viruses, but protects you, too, from worms, from Trojans, spyware, adware, even phishing scams and rootkits. Nod 32 is very proactive. It also has, I don't want to scare you off with this term, advanced heuristics. All that means is it knows to watch for virus-like activity and stop it cold. That's important because viruses spread so fast nowadays. Sometimes they actually are ahead of the virus updates that you get regularly. Nod 32 is very good about keeping those updates out there. But even if they're, you know, it's a brand new virus or it's one targeted right at you, it will catch it because it catches virus-like activity. Try it free for 30 days. You'll see what I mean. And I forgot to mention the best part as far as I'm concerned. It's not bloatware. It is light. It is tight. It gets the job done without getting in your way. It will not slow your machine down. And I think that's something you can't say for almost anything else. I want you to try it free 30 days. Go to ESET.com/Leo or call 866-935-ESET. 866-935-ESET. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. You probably know that. If you don't, you will. Moving on to another call. Scott Wilkinson is here, a home theater guru. Kurt is in New York. New York. Kurt, welcome to the Tech Guy Show.
Leo, this is the show I have been waiting for.
You know, it's funny because either we should do a home theater show in general. Actually, we do the Home Theater Geek Show every week. Or we just have Scott on more because there really is a lot of interest in this category.
Yeah, and the two of you guys together are so great, just a plethora of it.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Scott, I've got a two-part question for you. I've got a speaker question and then a screen burn question regarding plasma TVs. I remember weeks ago you were on the show and you mentioned something about high-end audio speakers and ohmage issues and potentially running into problems if you're not using a receiver that's of quality to drive the speakers. Basically, I'm... Mm-hmm. Teal tower speakers, and I'm running an Onkyo SR507 receiver. It's swinging 80 watts, and I'm wondering if that particular receiver is good enough for the Teal speakers that I'm using. They don't seem to sound quite as good as what I know Teal should be capable of doing.
Well, here's the question, and it relates back to what you mentioned earlier. What is the specified nominal impedance of those speakers?
You know, that I do not know off the top of my head. And
here's the deal. All speakers have a property called impedance. And as that name implies, it's the resistance to the flow of electrical current. So typically speakers will have 8 ohm impedance, sometimes 4 ohm impedance, much more rarely 2 ohm impedance. The lower the impedance, the less resistance the speaker shows to the amplifier or the receiver, and it actually forces it to the receiver or the amplifier to try to provide more and more and more power, and it can get maxed out and it can get distorted. It can sound very weird. So most receivers, in particular, moderately to low end receivers like the 507. Are not rated to certainly 2 ohm speakers, maybe even 4 ohm speakers. You really want higher impedance speakers like 8 ohm speakers. I don't know what those Teals are, and that's why I ask. If they're in the 2 to 4 ohm range, that could be the problem. because I doubt that Onkyo can drive safely drive those speakers with that low of an impedance. So that
of a better receiver that would be better for driving these kind of speakers.
Well, if I knew the model number of your speakers, I could look them up and find out what the impedance really is, and then maybe make a recommendation. I can't say that I know receivers and their capabilities in terms of impedance and what they can drive safely or easily or not. I'd have to do some research on that, so it's not something I could do right here on the air. But if you send me an email, I will try to do that. My email, there are several ways to get to me. The easiest is scott@techguylabs.com or scott@twit.tv. Either one will get to me. And if you send me the model number of the speakers, and if you have the documentation and what the impedance of them is, even better, I'll see if I can make a recommendation for you.
That'll be on the back of the speaker, right? They almost
likely,
always put it in the back there.
Sure.
And what about burn-in on plasma? That's gone, right? That's solved.
It's certainly significantly improved, majorly improved. It's not nearly the problem it used to be, and yet people are still afraid of it.
I am, because I spent a lot of money on that Kuro, and there ain't no more.
That's right.
So I noticed that one of the things more modern plasmas do is they have screensavers themselves. They'll bounce around.
That's right. But they also have what are called screen wipe functions, and your
interesting.
Your Kuro has that.
I haven't
seen
that.
If you dig into the menu, if you see, there's two types of what we sometimes call burn-in. One is called burn-in, which is permanent, and one is called image retention, which is temporary.
And even LCDs do that.
LCDs do that as well. That's true. It's a misnomer that they don't.
They won't burn in, but they will retain.
They will
image.
Retain image. Yeah. Exactly. So,
but they could be fixed.
Every once in a while, you know, you run the screen wipe function on a plasma. I have a Kuro too. I don't really worry about it. I watch some 4x3 material, some 16x9 material, some movie material. So there's sometimes black bars on the top and bottom, sometimes on the side, a 4x3 material even. You know, as long as you're kind of changing it up now and again regularly.
That's when it really shows up. And we used to get calls at Tech TV because we would leave a little bug, a little image in the lower right hand. And people would say, I see that from now on anytime I'm on any channel.
Exactly.
I think change a channel once in a while. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're doing a home theater show today. 8888 Ask Leo. If you have a question for Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guru from the Ultimate AV Magazine. Lots of good questions for you, Scott.
Oh, yeah.
And we did raise an issue before the several minutes
ago.
Yes. And we didn't get to it. We're talking about the high-end cables. And there are literally audiophile cables that can cost tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott, the amazing Randy, who is a magician
and a
debunker,
skeptic.
A skeptic. He does, in fact, a skeptic podcast, I think, is really a neat guy. And he's skeptical. So he offered a prize, a fairly large prize, for anybody who would prove that these audiophile cables were in any way measurably better.
Actually, he provides a prize, $1 million, to anyone who can prove any paranormal claim, and he includes these exotic speakers.
He says the speaker cable is paranormal.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And he, you know, and it's not measurable difference. It's can a particular person reliably pick between two in a blind A/B test.
He was talking specifically about the Père Anjou speaker
now,
cables, which are $7,250.
Right. Now here's the story. Père originally said, okay, we'll take that challenge.
Yeah.
And there was a Golden Ears guy who was going to do the test. His name is Michael Fremmer. He's been a guest on my podcast. He writes for Stereophile.
So you wouldn't use a meter. He was actually going to let a human decide.
That's right. Now, if you can go back and forth, A, B, and randomly and not known to the listener, and the listener can reliably say, oh, yeah, those are the better speakers, the cables, and no, those are the funky, cheap cables, then, you know, he will have proved his point now.
Right.
But Pear pulled out, and there was some kind of weird thing going on between them. Of Pear accused Randy of this, and Randy said, no way, it's this. And Pear, I think, was opposed to their testing methodology, Randy's testing methodology. Hmm. I don't know the final result, but it never happened. The problem is that it never happened, and I'm very disappointed in that. I really want somebody to do a true blind A-B test on exotic cables and see if there is a difference. Now, somebody did this at CES a few years ago in a less than perfectly scientific way, but Michael Fremer and John Atkinson did pick the expensive cables.
Oh, they
like
did.
80 or 90% of the time.
Oh, so they could hear a difference.
They could hear a difference. Now, how much of a difference is there really, and how much can the average person hear? I think it's very minimal. I don't think it's worth spending $7,200 for a pair of speaker cables, or Nordost Odins are like $20,000 for a pair of speaker cables. I really don't think it's necessary to spend that kind of money.
Yeah. Well, so we'll never know, I guess, until one of these companies, what do you got to lose? Randy's putting up the $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. I really want somebody to take him up on that.
Yeah,
I
it's
really
not like
do.
They have to pay him $1 million if they lose.
Right, right. They just lose.
And of course, they'd lose all their sales too, I guess. But maybe that's.
I'm
not going to speculate,
rub.
But that might be the reason they didn't want to do it.
That's right.
Kenny, Long Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here he is, Scott Wilkinson, to answer your question. Hi, Kenny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. It's funny that you guys mentioned about those the cables because I surf around on different boards, message boards, and you know they talk about the same thing. But my main question is something along audio, and I have a lot of vinyl records, and I'm looking to set up an analog stage. Now, I also want to rip, basically copy it onto my hard drive. That way, I don't have to go through the turntable every single time. Mm-hmm. And my main question is, how do I get my computer to output 24-bit audio? Because obviously I would want to maintain as much as original information as possible.
Mm. So but let's step back and explain what, first of all, are you going to get rid of the vinyl or you just want to have a digital copy of well?
I just want a digital copy. I've already gone through the whole process and digitalizing.
One of the things about vinyl is vinyl always sounds best the first time you play it.
Exactly.
And then every time you play it thereafter, that needle is damaging the groove a little bit, and eventually it's not going to sound as good. But if you could, in theory, capture the vinyl perfectly the first time you play it, would it sound better? Remember that every kind of digital sampling takes a chunk out. I mean, even they say it's lossless, but in effect, it always is lossy because instead of getting a smooth waveform, which is what the analog record's giving you, you're getting slices. Now, there's different ways of slicing it. You know, a typical CD is sliced 44,000 times a second, and each slice is in 16 bits of resolution.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about using 24 bits of resolution, which adds more choices, but you're still slicing it 44,100 times a second.
That's right. It increase the
doing it 96.
Okay, so now you're saying 96. Instead of slicing it 44,100 times a second, I'm going to slice it 96,000 times a second, and instead of representing each slice with a 16-bit number, which gives you 65,000 choices,
right.
I'm going to represent it with a 24-bit number, which gives you 2 billion choices. So it's a lot more information. It's still not every bit of information that's on the analog record. The question is, can anybody tell the difference?
And this is a really important question that I'm going to ask on my one of my poll questions one week. Is at what resolution does digital become indistinguishable from analog? Or is the answer never? Some people will say never.
It's inherently not this. It can never be the same.
That's right. But where is the just noticeable difference in the human sensory system?
Right.
Now, you asked about outputting at 24 bits. You obviously have to record.
Like, say I was to digitalize it, and I do put it at 24-bit at even 96 or 192.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that my computer output was just the onboard sound. I do use a separate...
You can buy, and I can answer this because I just reviewed some, you can buy digital-to-analog converters that will convert at higher bit rates. The typical ones in your sound card and your computer, you know, forget it. You're not going to get 96.
That's right.
But you can go out and buy audiophile DACs that are designed specifically to do this.
Well, first you need an ADC. You need an analog to digital converter to bring the vinyl.
You're
going to
digitize. Actually, you know what? We're going to take a break. When we come back in about 6 minutes, we will discuss the getting it in and getting it out, because there's two parts.
There's two parts. We have to talk about both.
He has to record at the higher level and then has to be able to play back at the higher level.
Yep.
And the bottom line, Kenny, it's going to cost you. But we'll talk about how much when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my friends at Citrix and their great remote access software, GoToMyPC. The holidays are coming. Wouldn't you like to be able to just to leave work early? Spend time with family and friends, but not get behind. That's what GoToMyPC is all about. Try it free for 30 days, actually 45 days, when you use my name, Leo. GoToMyPC.com/Leo. I think you'll like it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're doing a big 3-hour nonstop all dancing, all singing, home theater episode today, and it's been a lot of fun. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com. Used to be on the newsstand, Beautiful Magazine, but now it's all internet.
It's all internet. You know, print is...
That's the future.
It is the future, and I'm very glad to be on that cutting edge.
Always better to be part of the future than part of the past, in my opinion.
Yeah, even though I do play early music, and I like going to the past sometimes.
You like the past.
Yeah, but I like the future as well.
I just want the present. Just give me the present. Scott also is a columnist with Home Theater Magazine, and he does polls from time to time.
We're doing a weekly poll now. I'm asking some what I think are very interesting questions. Last week was our first one, and the question was, is modern 3D, and I'm not talking about, you know, the blue and red glasses and the funky monster movies of the 50s or the 70s even. I'm talking about modern 3D, Avatar and Despicable Me and whatever, and also 3D TV in the home. Is that a technological leap forward, or is it merely hype to get consumers to spend more money?
Now, nobody really knows. I mean, it's speculation at this point.
Of course. I'm asking for people's opinion. And the interesting thing was, I'm so grateful that so many people voted. We had over 900 votes. In a week.
So this is a good statistical sample.
This is a fairly reasonably good statistical sample. And when I go to that site, which is, where is it? Oh, I'm still on page one. Anyway, the vast majority of people said it's hype.
They've been listening to me. I remember when we talked about this, I recused myself.
I said, yourself.
I will not say, I want to hear what people think, but I've been pretty outspoken that I think it's bogus.
That's right. So 54% of respondents said it was hype.
Really?
Yep. 27% said both leap and hype.
Yeah.
So that's a reasonable answer.
I might actually choose that answer. There is some value to it. I'm not saying there's no value to it. In fact, anything that makes this more immersive is a good thing.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's some real strong negatives. The fact that you need to buy glasses, wear glasses.
Expensive glasses.
Yeah. They're not cheap.
Some people get sick watching it.
Yeah. The 3D itself is phony. It's not real 3D in the sense that it's not the way your brain does it.
Uh-huh. The third place winner was 3D is already over.
How many people voted for that?
119.
Wow. Like 10%.
Yeah. 13%.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was very illuminating, and I really appreciate everybody who voted. This week's question, I think, is equally interesting. It is, which is more important, convenience or quality? Now, I'm talking here about downloading and streaming media, which is very, very popular these days. You know, you got Roku and you've got Apple TV and you got Google TV and all this stuff.
But you sacrifice quality.
You sacrifice quality. They generally suffer from high compression artifacts, so softness, macro blocking, which makes it look like they're these big solid blocks, giant pixels essentially on the screen. Sometimes it even stutters the playback depending on your bandwidth and so on. So the real question is, and I would love for people to go vote on this, at ultimateavmag.com. It's very near the top of the homepage. Which is more important to you? And this is also a very important part of the question, is some people might prefer the convenience of being able to download whatever they want whenever they want. Copy protection notwithstanding, you can put it on a different device, maybe a portable device, take it with you wherever you go and watch it. You've seen commercials on TV about it. There it is on the screen.
Can I have both?
Well, there's one option of this poll is both are equally important.
Yeah, because I'm not going to, a lot of times last night we watch a Netflix streaming movie because Jennifer had a dream about Robert Downey Jr. and had a hankering to see a Robert Downey Jr. movie. And being a good husband, I said, well, honey, I'll just see what we can get. Now, we didn't have any discs from Netflix. We did, but they weren't Robert Downey Jr. movies.
Right.
So I said, well, I bet you I could find some on either Netflix or Amazon. And we have many choices now because the internet and Roku boxes and Google TV and all that.
Yep.
Apple TV, too. I have all three of them. And an Xbox 360. All three of them. All four of them hooked up to the TV.
Right.
Found an old, actually surprisingly good, kind of a tearjerker Robert Downey Jr. movie from the 90s called Heart and Souls that I'd never heard of, never seen, neither had she. We loved it. It was a wonderful ghost movie, you know, and it was great.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, how
and it was
quality?
On Netflix, and it looked great. Now, we're lying in bed on we're watching a 50-inch plasma, but we're about 10, 15 feet away. You know, we're watching through our feet. I think it was fine. Now, would I have preferred the Blu-ray? Probably not, because it was convenience.
There you go.
But on the other hand, do I love my Blu-ray movies played back on my Oppo, on my 60-inch Curro? You bet. I've never seen anything look so good in my life. It looks better than the theater.
Exactly. And that's why there's a fourth choice in my poll, which is it depends.
That's probably my answer.
Yeah. So I would
Although that's kind of a useless answer from your point of view of your poll.
Well, I mean, yes and no. What I really would love to ask anybody who votes is to then leave a comment.
Okay.
Particularly if you vote on It Depends, because then I want to know, well, what does it depend on for you? In your case, you know, it depended on you were in bed and you wanted to watch TV on your bedroom TV. And
it was convenient.
It was convenient.
And it, by the way, looked good enough. I certainly wasn't saying to myself, oh, that's blocky. There's artifacts. And it looked good.
Fantastic.
And by the way, over Wi-Fi, wasn't an HD movie. It still looked fine.
It was not an HD movie.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Now, we do have HD on those streaming sources. And right. They look, I guess, even better, but I did not notice a problem with this movie.
Then
it looked pretty
there
darn good.
There you go. There you go. So I really invite everyone to come and vote. You don't have to register on the site to do that. You can just vote. But if you want to leave a comment, and I sure would appreciate it if you did, you do have to register on the site, which is very easy. You just, you know, put in a username and a password that you want. And you get an email back that says, click here to make sure we know who you are. And
I like having both. I really do.
There you go.
I really think that's, you know, this is what I've always said is that people just want choice.
Yes.
They don't want to be constrained. They want what they want, when they want it, where they want it. And they don't want constraints, artificial constraints of copy protection and licensing to get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's
and
pretty.
That's one of the problems of streaming, though, is that I think you do have some measure of copy protection. So you can't just copy it onto your computer and copy it onto one thing or another, can you? I mean,
no,
it's streaming for one thing. It's not storing anywhere.
So streaming is always going to look worse. I'm sorry. It's going to because we don't have enough bandwidth to make it look as good as Blu-ray.
Correct.
And if I want a Blu-ray disc, I've got a Blu-ray player and I watch it. And
those
are the movies I really care about. You know, something like Fantastic Mr. Fox, which looks great in Blu-ray.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's really nice to have.
Right,
and that's
a
movie I might watch more than once.
Right. So it's either equally important or it depends for you.
Godfather?
Yeah, exactly.
Except when I got to Godfather 3, it was so awful. I didn't care if it was in Blu-ray. That movie should be streaming. Even worse. I don't know.
You're not alone in that evaluation.
So we're taking calls for Scott. If you've got a home theater question, 8888, ask Leo's the number, 888-827-5536. What did I say we were going to talk about? We interposed that. Now, I have such a bad memory. Chat room, did I say that I was going to come back to something after the break? I thought I did.
I think it was this. It was my poll question.
Okay.
So we covered that.
We're set.
Thank you for that.
Okay.
I think we are set.
And then now the chat room's not paying any attention because they're debating the best Robert Downey Jr. movies. And Chaplin is winning, and deservedly so.
That was
fabulous. We watched that the other night as well. And we watched that on streaming as well.
Yeah.
The nice thing is to be able to fire up your TV and either watch on demand or streaming, not having thought ahead. See, this is the issue, right?
Yes.
You have to think ahead to get a Netflix movie or to buy a Blu-ray movie or even to go to the movie store, if you still have one in your town.
Which is unlikely.
Yeah, they're disappearing fast.
Yeah. Now, it's going to. And the other question is, do you want your do you want to get your streaming media from your TV or from a set-top box like a Blu-ray player? And they're both commonly available now.
Yeah, I think that's the issue we're going through right now, which is there are 20 different ways to get Ethernet, to get the internet into your television.
Correct.
Some TVs come with it. There's Roku, there's Apple, there's this new Google TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a quick review, thumbnail review, because people have been asking about the Google TV.
Because I haven't seen it yet. I've only seen a demo.
Yeah. I talked at the beginning of the show about one of the problems, which is that the Google TV is interposing itself between your cable or satellite box and your television. And every once in a while, the Google TV has to put up an error message. In my case, for some reason, every few days, it says my clock is wrong, even though it's set to automatically get the time from the internet. It just decides. And it puts up an error message. And then it blanks itself after a while because it's protecting my screen, except that I don't know any of that's happened because I'm not watching TV. When I turn on the TV, I get a dark screen and no clue as to why I'm getting a dark screen until I finally, I don't know whether it was by accident or just because I tried everything else, tapped the keyboard on the Google TV, the Logitech Review is the one I have, and it came to life and said, oh, your time is wrong. Press OK. I pressed OK. Now the TV's back, but how would I have known? And I think that this is the problem in general with Google TV is that it's early days and it's still way more complicated than anybody. I mean, people just want to watch TV.
Yes.
So I'm very happy. I have the Roku box, which is pretty easy to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Netflix is better on Roku and on Apple TV. You can choose movies. You can search for movies. You can't do that on the Google TV yet. It's the old Netflix interface, which I think is not so good.
That's interesting.
Yeah. They haven't updated that. But I imagine Google will make this better and better. And
Logitech will make it better and better.
Presumably Logitech will adopt the improvements. We've Absolutely. Already had. That's the other thing. I mean, you don't want to turn on your TV and say, I have to update now. No, you please. I hate the Blu-ray does that too.
Yeah, it does.
You put a new disc in. It says, oh, and you know what that's all about? Copy protection. That's what they're doing. They're updating the copy protection. Come on. I'm sorry. Don't get me started. Coming up in just a bit, we're going to talk about electrostatic speakers, the pro and con. And also, Gary wants some advice on calibrating and installation his home theater system.
Excellent.
Scott's an expert. He's certified.
You bet.
We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you have a question for our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, in studio with us all day today. We also have a chat room, and Scott's been talking to the chat room during the breaks. You can find that at techguylabs.com. James DeRuvo, who normally takes the show notes for us, is out on a scout camping adventure. And what do they call those? Jamborees? Jamboreeing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But he'll be back at the end of the weekend, and we'll get all those notes in for you. Meanwhile, though, if you go to techguylabs.com, you can click the chat link, get thrown into our chat room. You can click the watch live link and see Scott sitting there and me, too. What is that T-shirt? That says, people are asking about
yes.
your T-shirt.
This is a Native American sun sign.
That's what it looked. I thought it was maybe Mayan or Aztec or something.
Yeah,
that's
no, it's North American North someplace, American. Plains Indians or something. I don't remember exactly, but my wife and I really enjoy Native American culture. We took our 20th anniversary trip up to British Columbia, and so we got immersed in...
Isn't that neat? They have the totems.
Yeah, the totem poles and all that stuff. Incredible. Yeah, that's just great. And we go to powwows when we can and watch the dances. It's really fun.
So the chat room finally did remind me that we had promised to talk about something. Our last caller of the last hour said he's got a lot of vinyl records and wants to preserve them as best he can.
Yep.
But he wants to digitize them. And we talked a little bit before the break about the fact that digitizing anything is going to reduce the information. Whether you'll hear it or not is a moot question. Nobody knows, right?
Well, I mean, certainly you can dial down the resolution to the point where certainly you'll hear it. You know,
But how much is enough to get it all is the question. And you never get it all.
You never get it all. No, that's true. And there are those audiophiles who say it will never sound exactly the same. This is one of the questions I'm going to ask on my poll on UAV is, at what point, if you use higher and higher resolution, more and more bits to represent each of those slices, and more slices per second, at some point, there's got to be, it seems to me, a place beyond which the human hearing system won't be able to tell the difference. But there are those who say, yes, it will, always, because there's some sort of maybe mystical thing going on, I don't know. but in any event,
so typical CDs are recorded 44. What they do is they, so if you think, if you imagine, I'll try to explain this, and then what we were about to say will make more sense.
Right.
If you imagine an analog sound, the sound of me talking into your ear, it's as a wave form. It looks like, you know, it's jaggy. There's a lot going on, but it essentially looks like a wave form.
Right.
And it's continuous.
It varies smoothly.
Yeah. In order to capture it, in order to turn it into ones and zeros, you have to do something called sampling it, which means just taking a little measurement of the amplitude of that waveform.
What's called the instantaneous amplitude. As the wave is going up and down, you're taking a little picture here, and then it's gone up a little bit further. You take a little picture there and a little bit further there.
If you do that with high enough resolution, you probably don't hear the difference. A typical CD, I mean, get this. We'll sample 1 second of music. We'll take 44,100 samples, tests, measurements of music, and it will return a value between 0 and 65,000 for each of those.
Right.
That's what we call 44.1K, 16-bit recording, and that's a CD.
Right.
So that's what you're mostly hearing. And this is before MP3 compression or anything.
Right.
This is uncompressed.
That's the best of what mostly you hear in digital audio.
Right.
MP3 takes that and compresses it down, throws away as much as 90%. 90% of that information is thrown away in MP3s, typically.
But we're not even going to talk about MP3s. We're going to just say, how do we sample this? How much better do we have to get? And our caller said, well, I want to sample it at, instead of 44,100, 92,000. 96,000, rather.
Yep. And with 24-bit resolution on each of those samples.
So instead of 65,000 choices, there's 2 billion choices.
And that the number of bits really determines the dynamic range of what you can represent. 16 bits is a theoretical maximum dynamic range of about 96 decibels.
Oh, interesting.
The human hearing system has a dynamic range of about 130 decibels.
So inherently, it's below what we can do.
Right. But 24 bits, I think, is theoretically maxed out at 144 decibels. So 24 bits theoretically exceeds what the human hearing can do. Now, there are various factors that reduce the effective dynamic range. But still, 24 bits should be fine. Still, there are some people who record in 32 bits. I'm now starting to hear things about people recording with sampling rates of 384,000 times a second.
So they're increasing the number of samples per second and how much of the sound that, you know, how much the amplitude is. It's almost like resolution.
That's exactly right.
You know, the more screen resolution, the more detail you can see on the screen, the more sound resolution, the higher number of bits per sample, the more you can hear.
Detail you can hear, in a sense. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Right.
So now that we understand how it's done, let's solve this guy's conundrum. First of all, he wants to record at a higher bit rate. How do you do that?
Well, you just need software that'll do it.
And probably an analog to digital converter that has that
precisely,
kind of capability.
Precisely. Now, you can buy relatively inexpensively what are called USB turntables. Now, they're regular vinyl turntables, but they have a USB cable coming out of them, and you stick them in your computer. They have the analog to digital converter built into the turntable. Now, if you're going to buy these turntables, which are, I don't know, maybe $100 or a couple hundred bucks, you can't expect that good of an analog to digital conversion. And that's really going to be your critical link to this whole process. If you want to record your albums as high quality as possible, you really want a very good A to D converter. And you can spend many, many thousands of dollars on A to D converters. So, you know, depending on your budget, you get the best thing you can. What I would probably do is get an external A to D converter, and then run the audio from the turntable into it.
Okay.
And we will continue
and
this.
We'll continue then, because that's getting it in. Now we got to get it out.
Right.
We'll do that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, with Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866 the number 2 get net to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, Scott Wilkinson's here, our home theater expert, and we're taking calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. We're going to get back to the phones in just a little bit. In 6 minutes, we will talk to Gary in Granite Bay, who's looking for an installer.
Ah.
As I mentioned, and Scott is a certified THX calibrator, so he knows a little bit about that. But before we do, we want to finish. So we talked about recording super high quality audio from a vinyl source or from a live source. You'd have to have a good source to begin with.
Correct.
The mics are going to impact it. The turntable is going to impact
it. The cartridge on the turntable is going
to
impact it.
The needle. And then you have to have a good analog to digital converter, an ADC that turns it into bits, and you record those bits on the hard drive. Those bits, once done, that's it. They're perfect. They're done.
Well, they're not perfect, but they're there.
They're perfectly as good as they're going to get.
Right.
And then you have to play them back. Right. Now, by the way, people can go out. There are lots of people selling now high-def audio recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Bowers and Wilkins does it. You have a
Mark Waldrop at itracks.com does it. He's been
like
on my
iTunes for high def.
Right. High resolution audio recordings. I know Mark Waldrop's recordings very well, and they're superb. So if you want that, it's a great way to get it.
But now it's on your computer. How do you play it back? You just use your sound card?
Well, you need to have a sound card that will then convert those bits back into analog ultimately, because at some point, you need to get it back to your speakers, and the speakers need to vibrate, and they need an analog signal.
Right.
So you need
ADAC, digital to analog.
Analog converter. Now, virtually all sound cards have those, but again, if you buy a cheapy sound card, it's going to have a cheapy DAC.
Some sound cards claim 9624, but I'd be honest with you, you want to get it out of the computer.
I think so, too.
Because inside the computer is noisy, and even if you've got a card capable of it, it will be getting noise.
Yeah.
I reviewed a company called High Resolution Technologies. There are a number of companies that make these, but I've reviewed their Music Streamer 2. It's $150. It has a 9624 DAC. It's USB, so you connect it to the USB port of your computer.
Right.
Doesn't need a driver, because most computers know, oh, I'll put audio out that way, no problem. And then it has analog plugs that you'd plug into your stereo.
That's right.
And so these will be what you need if you want to play back. I think you should get if you want to play back this high resolution stuff.
Exactly. If you're taking the trouble to digitize your record collection at $24.96, which our caller wanted to do, then you really want to be able to play it at that resolution so you can hear it as good as it will be.
And you, I think, want to get it out of the computer.
I agree. Do that. I agree.
Get an external USB connector.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. I think we've covered that now in more detail than anybody really wanted, but we had to do it. Let's talk to Gary, Granite Bay, California. Gary, you're next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru.
Hello, gentlemen. I have a question for Scott. I'm looking to install a dedicated home theater room in my house in the Sacramento area.
Excellent.
I've been somewhat disappointed by some of the companies I've gone to in this way. It seems like they want to sell product more than they want to actually design a top quality theater room. And what I mean is, I really am looking for someone to come in, take a look at the room, listen to the acoustics of it, and then based upon that, choose the product as opposed to start with the product and try to fit it into my room. And so what I want to know is, how do I find that type of installer?
That's a great question, because a lot of installers, at least the ones that work for dealers, retail dealers, are going to push up whatever they happen to be selling. So you want to find an independent installer, somebody perhaps who doesn't even sell any product at all. And there are plenty of those types around. The two places I would look are on ISF.com or ImagingScience.com. It's the Imaging Science Foundation. And THX.com. Both organizations, Imaging Science Foundation and THX, certify home theater calibrators. Now, ISF only does it for video, whereas THX certifies both video competency and audio competency. So in that case, I'd probably say go for THX. Find a THX, a certified THX professional in your area, and call them up and say, do you sell stuff or do you just recommend? And if they just recommend, then say, sure, come on over and check out my thing. I agree with you entirely that you want to gauge the situation before you start making recommendations, which is why I always ask when people say, what should I buy? I say, well, what's your situation before I can really make an honest
how big is the room? How is it laid
how
out?
Far are you, how far away are you sitting? What kind of ambient light situation there is? All that kind of stuff. So I would say go to THX.com, and I'm sure they have a certified installer, not installer, but certified
calibrator.
Listing, and you could probably search by zip code or something like that and find somebody near you. But that's the way I'd go.
I talk a lot to installers, and they're great because they're enthusiasts like us.
Exactly.
And it's fun to talk to them. But they're going to cost you some money. This is what
they
do for a living.
That's what they do for a living. So they do cost you money. A good TV or video display calibration can be $300 to $500.
And that's if you've already got the gear, it's all in the house, and they just have to calibrate it.
Calibrating it.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Scott Wilkinson is a home theater guru. He's really great. You go to his magazine, ultimateavmag.com, and you can read great reviews of all kinds of gear. Some more low-end stuff coming to the magazine.
To home theater mag.com.
Home theater mag, okay.
That's where we're going to be doing more mass market, most popular on Amazon type products. I've got a couple of projectors in line. I've got a couple of TVs in line, a couple of Blu-ray players. So we're going to really be looking at what is selling the best. Or the most, I should say. And is it really good?
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like it too.
HomeTheaterMag.com.
This is also where I answer reader questions. So you can email me at scott@techguylabs.com or scott@twit.tv and ask me questions. I get an awful lot of email, so I can't necessarily get to everybody. And I really apologize for that, but I'm only one guy.
Scott will answer some more questions in just a little bit. In fact, we're going to talk to, we got a challenging one for you, a fellow who wants to set up surround sound in his restaurant. Surround sound video system in his restaurant. That could be a challenge, but Scott's up to it, I'm sure. Before we do that, I'd like to mention backing your system up. I know, I always feel like I'm nagging you when I do these Carbonite commercials, but I don't mean to nag you. I just think it's so important. And what I really want to say is I hate it. I hate it when people call up and say, I just lost all the pictures of my babies or my dog, or my financial records are gone, or my business went up in smoke, and now what do I do? Ah, it just breaks my heart. There is a solution, but you got to be a little proactive. You've got to be backing up. And if you're going to back up, two things I'd suggest. One, it should be automatic so you don't have to remember because you'll forget. And two, it should be off-site because if there's a fire, you'll lose your backups. If there's a theft, If there's an earthquake or a tornado, you'll lose your backups. You want to get them out of the building. Best way to do it, Carbonite. Carbonite's automatic. It's off-site, uploads it to the internet, uses encryption, so it's safe. Whenever you're online, even at an open internet access spot, which is normally not safe, you are 128-bit encrypted right to the Carbonite cloud where your stuff is being backed up all the time. And you can get it back so easily. You don't have to be a super whiz to do this. It's so simple. They've even got an iPhone app, a BlackBerry app, or you can log on to any computer and there's your stuff. So you've always got this peace of mind that I'm safe, I'm backed up. Hard drives fail, disaster happens, be prepared with Carbonite. Try it free right now. 2 weeks free, PC or Mac, carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. If you decide to buy, use my name, Leo, again, and you'll get 2 months free. But I want you to try before you buy. That's why they set up the two-week trial. Just get a sense of what it does for you. I think you're going to like it. It sure is peace of mind. Carbonite, you got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. All right, Scott, you ready for the challenge?
Here's the challenge.
Okay,
I'm
Scott
ready.
Is another Scott in Thousand Oaks, California. Scott, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you guys doing? Great show today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Yeah, actually, what I'm looking to do, not really to set up surround sound. I work in a restaurant in Agoura Hills, and I'm looking for a relatively inexpensive way to set up a media server to push some visuals around.
Oh.
Lounge is open. I do a commercial installation with digital signage, so I use pretty much just Key West products on my network-based projects, but I'm not sure about what the consumer market has to offer.
So you want to have a centralized storage device in the business.
Correct.
That has video and audio and pictures on it? What is on this?
Video. We just want to push some images around to the lounge at night.
I got it. And so you have some video, whatever that is, let's say a beautiful fire burning or some tropical images or karaoke or whatever, but it's all stored on a central hard drive, a network attached storage.
And the occasional streaming international soccer game for happy hour.
Okay, so now you need a computer because you're going to pick up a stream.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to distribute it to a variety of screens. Some of them will have the same thing on them, some of them won't.
Correct. The distribution's already built in.
So you don't have to worry about
it. Yeah, we got a nice Cranor system, so we push it around just fine. I'm just not sure how to get, and I'm just looking for an inexpensive way to have a media server in the restaurant.
Yeah, I would say a NAS is what you want. It's mm-hmm. network-attached storage. I'm sure you know all about this. And there's a lot. But the good news is because consumers are doing this now in their houses, you know, they have multiple computers, multiple screens, and they have slideshows, they have music, they have video that they'd like to have served everywhere. They're starting to do this, which means there's a great choice. I'm very a big fan of the Netgear Ready NAS line.
Mm-hmm. HP also makes.
HP makes Windows home servers, which mm-hmm. people do like if you're, you know, but this is very consumery, and I think you're a little more sophisticated than that, Scott.
Mm.
But if you know, you're a Windows user, you love Windows, home servers are very easy. And lately, a number of people have told me about a company called Synology, Synology, and I've been meaning to go out and get a Synology media server and try them. I hear very good things about them. They have a broad variety of stuff. They're essentially NASs, but they're really focused on media. They have a big media server. And all of these guys run servers that will work with, you know, kind of Windows or Mac, iTunes. You know, they all appear to be a traditional media server. So usually you don't have compatibility issues. I'm not sure what your screens require. But I mean, what format? Are they Windows Media?
Oh no! Right now we're just pushing it. We just push component video through a Cranor, and it distributes it out to all the.
I got it. So you don't have to even worry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would take a look at these Synologies. People are really raving about them to me, and I've got to go out and try them out. I've seen very good reviews. They have a broad range of Swiss systems. Absolutely, do all the different things that a NAS would do, including media serving. Synology.com. And I'm going to have to get a review unit of one of their disk stations and let you know. Otherwise, I've been very happy and continue to buy Netgear's Ready NAS. They're very good, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Actually, we're out of time. We're just going to have, Scott, you're just going to have to come back.
I'd be happy to.
And do this all again.
You
I mean,
bet.
You could see three hours go by like.
Like nothing.
Like nothing.
Zippity doo dah.
You had one last question from the chat room.
Yes. Somebody from the chat room is asking about building a home theater from scratch, ground up, floor to ceiling, money, no object, best of the best. Wow. I wish.
I think you should do a podcast on that subject.
In fact, I'm going to.
Oh.
On Monday.
Oh. 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern.
That's right.
Live.twit.tv on the web.
My guest is Theo Kalamarakis, probably the world's premier home theater designer of very high-end home theaters. I mean, he did the American Academy of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Theater. He's done mega-million-dollar theaters all over the world. A very, very smart guy. So he's my guest on Monday, and we're going to be talking about his work building the best home theaters in the world. Last week, you really must check out last week, Chris Huston told stories about having dinner with Charlie Manson.
Oh, wow.
And getting arrested in East Germany with his band, The Undertakers, who opened for the Beatles in Liverpool in the early 60s.
Yeah, you told us he was going to be
amazing. Such amazing stories.
You could get these shows. They're podcasts. Scott does them for my Twit podcast network, This Week in Tech Network. And you can get all of our shows at twit.tv. That's the website. Just six little letters, twit.tv.
Short and sweet.
His is the Home Theater Geeks show. Scott's been great having you. Why don't you stick around? Because you know who else is here? Dick DiBartolo.
He's
another great podcaster on the Twit Network.
Fantastic.
He does our daily GizWiz show. Although we don't usually cover high-end home theater topics.
No, we don't. As a matter of fact, I knew Scott was a guest, so I found my highest end speaker that retails for $55.
What is that?
Well, yeah, tell us.
That's the Vibe. And Scott, I don't know if you even
oh, this is
if
far
you know
from home.
About-
far, far from high. Far yes, from exactly, high, exactly. High end audio.
But that's all this right. This is a fun item if you travel. And I was down at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show last weekend. And I traveled with the little netbook from Acer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a little 11.5-inch screen. And if you're watching movies, the sound's not very loud. So the little Vibe, what you do is you plug it into a USB port and you charge it about 2.5 hours. Then it'll run for 5 hours. And what you do is put it on any empty box. And it makes the box into the sound enclosure.
Wow.
And you get really decent sound out of it.
So this thing's just a little driver.
Yeah. Yes, that is exactly right.
That's amazing.
And what I found works really great is in a hotel room, take the tissue box out of the bathroom. Turn it upside down. Well, I mean, for home theater, Scott, you would need two tissue boxes.
I think I could find those around the house somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And then just lay this on top. The audio is really great compared to what you'll be getting out of a tiny little laptop.
Yeah. It's certainly loud.
Yes, it's certainly loud. And Ozzy. Hey, Ozzy. I think Ozzy's the only one hearing the speaker right now.
Yeah. Ozzy's my dog who has gigantic, ginormous ears.
He's
pricking up his ears at whatever it is you're doing there, Dick. So do you have a dog whistle that you're blowing there? Is that it?
Yeah. So Vibe, if you shop Amazon, about $55. And what I like about it is that it's really small for travel. And they even tell you that if you can't find a box, just put it on top of the box they ship it with.
And comes with its own box.
It comes with its own speaker enclosure.
Man, that great. Is ingenious.
Isn't that funny?
I took it to a party and put it on the table, and it sounded like a wooden table. It sounded like the entire table was playing.
Wow.
So it's fun for the money. It's great for travel, too.
Dick does a regular show with us, just like Scott does. Dick's the Daily Gizwiz show, and that's also at TWIT.TV. And he's also, you may say, gee, that name, Dick DiBartolo, that sounds so familiar. Well, you might have seen him on the walls of post offices everywhere. He's very famous for being Mad Magazine's maddest writer. And it's really a pleasure to see you, Dick. We'll get going with the Daily Gizwiz right after the radio
Absolutely.
Show.
And Scott, good seeing you and hearing you.
Thanks.
Take care.
You too.
Scott Wilkinson, you are at the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com.
Yep.
I don't know why I'm telling you that. You probably already knew it.
I do know that.
But others can find you there.
Yes. And please do. We try to put up a very interesting stuff there. That website covers pretty high-end stuff, generally speaking. Although I am asking now these philosophical questions that I hope everybody chimes in on. And then hometheatermag.com, which is the website of Home Theater Magazine, which still is has a print version, where I answer reader questions every week in Ask Home Theater. And we will soon start publishing reviews of these very well-known, good, best-selling products to see if they really meet their...
Before we run off, I want you to meet Phil and Yukaipa. Phil's on the line right now. And Phil used to build speakers in the 60s. Hi, Phil.
How you doing, Ron? I always call you Ron. Leo. Yeah, I want to get the most important thing across first. I built speakers, like you just said, in the 60s when stereo first came out. Mm-hmm. And the audiophile of today doesn't realize that his ears are, if he doesn't keep his volume down to a listening degree, his ears are going to be shot.
Oh, my God, how this is so important.
Right. Pardon me?
It's so important. I'm so glad you brought that up.
This is a cost that anybody who lived in the 60s, as you and I and Phil did, are paying for standing next to loudspeakers during rock and roll concerts, for listening way too loud to our music. But, you know, Phil, in today, what's going on is kids are using earbuds and headphones, and they're listening too loud to those. They're doing the same thing.
They're putting that sound wave right next to their eardrums. It's horrible.
It's very bad.
I suggest people put put their money into hearing aids. And hearing aids, by the way, are for the birds. Anyway, what I did, and you might not find this hard to believe, the speaker system of that day were Eltec Lansing. They were theater systems. And they used a horn for a mid-range and a high.
You know what, Phil? We're going to get the story tomorrow because we're running out of time. But Scott's been great having you. You too, Dick DiBartolo. You too, Phil. You too, guys. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.